Luke wants us to know that Jesus' resurrection is very much in the flesh. Jesus is not a ghost, although that is exactly what the disciples at first think they are seeing. Luke spells it out. Jesus took the fish and ate it in their presence. Death's bluff has really been called. Jesus has taken all of the power out of death, including fear. As they are beginning to come to terms with Jesus in the flesh in front of them, and when they are ready, Jesus opens the disciples' minds to understand the scriptures. In doing this, Jesus brings God's story right up to that moment, and the disciples discover that they are standing in God's presence. The story does not conclude with Jesus' death, or even with Jesus' resurrection. They are central to God's story going forward. One might say that the disciples are God's plan for the future of his community. You are witnesses of these things. You are witnesses of these things. Others will depend on the disciples' witness and faithfulness. There are times that we don't really want to be drafted as Jesus' witnesses. There are certainly those times in my life, and I would imagine that they might be in yours as well. In fact, in a way, the more seriously we take the faith, the more we might balk at some of those claims on us. We don't always embrace the sequel to resurrection. We'll take the good news, but it can be tempting to set aside the responsibilities of baptism and the vows that we make day by day. However, there is no scriptural passage that I know of where Jesus offers the option of a multi-tiered discipleship. In other words, with exemptions. You are witnesses of these things. The first disciples were not trained religious professionals or scholars. Paul was a trained scholar. He comes along a little later. But among that first group, as far as we know, they did not have any distinguishing qualifications. And yet they're called, every one of them. Being a witness is more than coming to church, although Lord knows that is today countercultural enough and essential as a foundation for every one of us. The church is the only place where week after week we gather to hear the gospel and receive the sacraments. We all need that. And yet the church and Jesus are not exactly the same thing. Being a witness is following the one who animates the church. As witnesses to Jesus, we are not off the hook when the institutional church shows its feet of clay. We're not off the hook even when we are disappointed by our fellow disciples or disappointed in ourselves or in the church leadership. In fact, it's especially then that we are called to be faithful witnesses to Jesus. The world's model for following a path is career, from the French carrière, meaning highway. Jesus does not give us a career path for being a witness, so it is hard to know how we are doing. And because of that, some churches and Christians have set their own assessments of their discipleship, which so often bear more resemblance to the ways of the world and success and the values of empire than they do to the gospel. A calling is different from a career. A calling is first and foremost something, or rather someone, that we listen for, outwardly and inwardly. I have just been blessed by a few days in Ravenna, Italy, learning about the iconography of the early church. Early Christian arts of all kinds fascinate me because of the story they tell of our faith in its formative years. Ravenna was uniquely situated between Eastern and Western Christianity, and it has some stunning 5th and 6th century mosaics. This was also a time when definitions of Jesus were still, if not fluid, then under formation, in formation, under debate. And if we were regular folks in Ravenna, in the 5th and 6th centuries, likely we would not be able to read. And so the art that we saw in our local parish church would be an essential part of our faith formation. These mosaics aren't just elaborative and pretty. They are fundamental to how the Christian community understood itself and understood Jesus, the one to whom we're called to be a witness. And my biggest learning from these few days in Ravenna, from these early churches and mausoleums and baptistries and sarcophagi, is that there are sheep everywhere. In one of the churches, the 12 apostles are represented as sheep on a hillside. They're coming out from Bethlehem and from Jerusalem, and they're in procession up towards Jesus. And above that is an unusual transfiguration scene set in beautiful green fields. Over the altar, there is an enormous gold mosaic cross with the head of Christ in the center at the crossbeam. Under the arms of this empty cross, Peter, James, and John, who were at the Transfiguration on the mountain, are present, but they too are represented as sheep. Early tombs frequently have on their sides a plain cross with two sheep feeding, drinking from the arms of the cross, being nourished by the living water flowing from it. Other mosaics show deer, again drinking from living waters flowing from an empty cross. There are doves in pairs drinking from bowls of water. The message everywhere in this ancient Christian art is that Christ is safety, nourishment, living water, and care. In churches, in mausoleums, the primary image of Jesus is the shepherd, a young shepherd actually with flowing hair, holding a slender symbol of his own resurrection like a crook in his arm. And often this young shepherd tenderly reaches out one of his arms to touch the head of the sheep nearest him. The shepherd is the voice that the sheep are seeking and listening for and trusting and following. If you walked into one of these 5th or 6th century churches, baptistries, or mausoleums knowing nothing about the Christian faith, you would assume that Christ the loving shepherd is the very heart and soul of our faith and our God. But there is more. If we look closely, what we see is a subversive commentary on the empire. In these mosaics, emperors and their palaces are often immortalized along with the saints and the apostles. And sometimes signs of their power, their strength, are there in the mosaics as well. There's a fleet of ships, for example, tethered just outside the city. The powers of empire look across the altar at Christ, the tender shepherd. And high above the altar, Christ is the ruler of all, from the empty cross by the divine hand of God. As if to say, there are limits. There are limits to the powers that rule your daily existence, your present life. There is another greater kingdom. Power and leadership are deconstructed, we might say, and put together differently in this stunning art. They're put together in a pattern that gives new life. And these possibilities continue to be life-giving for all of us who seek to follow Christ, to be witnesses to this kind of God. The tender shepherd of these mosaics show the same tenderness as John shows as he writes to his faith community. See what love the Father has given us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are. On the day of my confirmation at 20, my confirmation sponsor wrote me a note, always encouraging me to open up the Bible. She wrote, "Today is your confirmation day. 1 John 3:1, look it up. See what love the Father has given us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are." Every time I read this verse, I remember my friends rejoicing that the faithful witness of that Christian community on that college campus had led me to commitment to Christ. And looking back, the way that this happened had everything to do with Jesus the Good Shepherd. That community of people in their late teens and early 20s imitated Christ's good shepherding to me in their kindness, in their patience, in listening to my questions, and in being willing to speak about Jesus and who Jesus was for them. There is no more important image of Jesus' love for us than this tender good shepherd, guiding and caring for his flock. That is what our witness can imitate. We don't need to witness by arguing for Jesus as a superior moral being, a wiser teacher, as more heroic than other religions' gods. But Jesus as a different kind of leader of a different kind of kingdom, a shepherd who leads through being with his flock, in the midst of his disciples' daily lives and needs, around the table with them. When the church lives this kind of witness to this kind of Lord, by genuine kindness to each other and all others, our witness becomes magnetic. It was so in 5th century Ravenna, and it will be so today and tomorrow and forever. Loving kindness is the most compelling witness of all. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.